course, the crowd wants Reed to go for it. Wouldn't be surprised if he did on 4th-and-1.
So, anyways, with that, time jerks.
Welcome to 4th-and-1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Mr. Nick Jacobs. Nick, it is off-season. We're fast approaching the combine. Free agency will be here before we know it, as well as my son's youth soccer season. Which one are you most excited for?
The youth soccer season,
right?
Of course.
I can't
wait for it. It's going to be super exciting.
Right. Are you going to come support me as a coach?
It depends on what time the game is. Is it before noon?
I always get, every time I sign my oldest son up for a soccer league, I get drafted into being the coach then. Spoiler alert, I'm not a very good soccer coach.
All right, well, you've given me all the marketing tools I need to be ecstatic about coming to that soccer match.
Well, I mean, I am 11-3-2 in my coaching career, so I have a glossy record, but most of that's a reflection of the fact that I had players who were better than the other kids. And I just got out of the way.
What's your team name?
It's kind of like
what's the team name?
It's kind of like the Andy Reid philosophy. I just let Patrick Mahomes go do whatever he wants, and then he wins a Super Bowl.
What's your team name?
Harrison chose the Dragons, so we are the Dragons.
All right, so come on down and watch the Dragons. Well, Todd Palmer is 11. What's your record?
11-3-2. Career record.
11-3-2 career record.
Right, yeah.
See if he can match that on the Missouri side of the state line.
That's right. I do own one Olathe 4th grade Parks and Rec spring soccer championship. So I have that on my resume.
Yeah, I know, because that's all you could talk about when I came to visit you at your house was that on the mantle. See that trophy over there? It's from my coaching abilities.
Yep. I don't know why they haven't put it up at Children's Mercy Park or something like that yet. Like, you know, they paint the wall when they get championship, but there's not one for me, even though I used to be a beat writer for Sporting Kansas City.
It's probably because, you know, Sporting Kansas City didn't win the title there, Don.
Right, but everything I learned, I learned from Peter Vermees and Terry Hare, the Olathe soccer coach.
Well, I mean, you've done nothing but given great marketing to come out and watch this youth soccer game.
So, I'll keep you guys posted on when game times are. So
it's going to be like your fantasy team.
That's
all
right.
Over again.
You guys can come out and cheer. I do still, for those who don't know, I did win our fantasy football league. It's the first time I've ever won one, though. I don't know if that makes you feel any better or if that makes you feel worse.
So I heard we have a Chiefs podcast.
Yeah. We're going to talk about free agents today, guys. And I guess we'll just start off talking about Chris Jones, because that seems to be the one player everybody wants to talk about. And I think I don't think there's a consensus about what the Chiefs should do here. A lot of people look at Chris Jones and say he's one of our best players. He's one of the best pass rushing defensive tackles in the league. The Chiefs can't afford to lose him. Just pay the guy and move on. And then a lot of other people look at it as a more pragmatic approach that, hey, you can't pay Frank Clark and Chris Jones on that line, knowing what you have coming with a Patrick Mahomes extension that you're going to need to sign and other guys down the road. It's too much money to invest in that position. You've already committed to Frank Clark. You need to franchise tag him and get whatever value you can from teams. Hope you can create a bidding war and drive the price up on the trade market for Chris Jones. So we'll start there. Do you think the Chiefs should re-sign him? Which of those strategies do you support?
I still support franchise tag, and if you need to play him on the tag this year, I get it. But overall, I would be at the combine seeing if there would be interest in him and what the value round wise would be, because I think he deserves to get paid. I'm not disputing that.
Right,
he deserves to get paid by somebody. I mean, the economics for the Chiefs. I think it's when you're having to look at it both short term and long term. I think that the draft picks is where you're going to need sustainability long term if you can hit on those versus assigning Chris Jones along with Frank Clark and some of the other moves. I think it limits you in your flexibility financially, both short term and long term.
And I think the wild card here is the collective bargaining agreement, because
right,
depending on what happens there, it could be a situation where it does make a little bit more sense financially to commit to a couple guys on the defensive line, because I think we know most important position in the NFL is the quarterback, but I think the next most important position are your pass rushers, and you've already got Frank Clark on there, but Chris Jones has led the Chiefs in sacks each of the last 2 years from the defensive tackle position. That's a pretty impressive stat. And I think that he did a lot of the things. You know, we talked a lot about this last year. One of our reservations about Chris Jones was, how would he fit into Steve Spagnuolo's system? Would he be able to buy in and do some of the things that you needed him to do in terms of run defense, in terms of gap discipline and things like that in certain situations? I think by and large, he checked a lot of those boxes during the course of the year, and he's a reason why the defense got better over the course of the season, because he was a pretty steady performer once he came back from the hamstring injury.
I think he's a good pass rusher, and I think that's kind of where his impact is and where he'll get paid. In terms of run defense, I mean, if you allow him to shoot the gap, he's fine, but if he gets double teamed, he gets knocked all the way out to second level. So I mean, you're just kind of you gotta put him in a scheme where he shoots the gap, he gets upfield, and the consequences are the consequences from it.
Well, and the only other thing you can do is try to get more of a run stuffing presence. Where and look, I think Derek Nnadi and Mike Pinnell did a good job in that role on that side. When they were paired up on the inside. But I mean, there is value to having a guy that commands a double team on the interior, because that does, typically free up the other defensive tackle and often helps, the edge rushers or any blitzers to the side where the guy who commands a double team is.
Yeah, it's just a matter of the reality comes down to this, and we'll put it as bluntly as possible, is do you want to pay $20 million a year, $18 to $22 million a year for a player that can be disruptive, can force double teams, but at the same time struggles in the run, especially when teams double team him to the second level? Or do you want to pay for that? And are you willing to sacrifice being able to have two other positions that you could potentially pay for a marketable player at those spots? So, I mean, for me personally, I'm willing to tag trade, move forward, but we'll see what happens.
Is it as simple in your mind as pay Chris Jones or pay a top end, potentially pay an elite corner? I mean, do you feel like the Chiefs are in a position where they have to choose one of the two? They can either have Chris Jones or they can go try to find an elite corner, but you can't do both, right?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to choose. I think you're going to choose one or the other in that regard.
So the other interesting thing is if you franchise tag him, and if you make Chris Jones play on the 1 year franchise tag, one, that creates a lot of animosity typically with a player, because while they get a big salary that year, they don't have any security moving forward in the case of injury or anything like that. So a lot of times, players don't like that. That's why you see them hold out well into training camp, before signing the tag and doing some of the things that they do. The other thing though that it affects is this year's salary cap, because the Chiefs already have a lot of salary cap commitments, and it would reduce their flexibility in terms of what they can do with, restructuring contracts, trying to pay bonus money up front and get money for future years off the books too, right?
Correct.
All right. So we started talking numbers, so Nick shut down.
I'm also going to keep us on time.
I sent him to his sad place. but let's stick with the D-line, though, okay? Because you've got a couple other guys there, four other guys that are along that defensive line that are out of contract. One of them is Terrell Suggs. He says he wants to play another year. But I'm guessing that the money he's going to be wanting as a veteran and now two-time Super Bowl champion, that's going to be cost prohibitive for what you're going to get production-wise from him.
Yeah, I don't think he can give you significant snaps for an entire NFL season and pay at something in that $6 to $8 million range. It's not worth that. If he was wanting to do vet minimum, hey, I'm all for that. That's cool, but I don't see him
right
wanting to play for vet minimum.
I'm not sure his agent or the NFLPA would be comfortable with that either, because he's a future Hall of Fame guy, and you don't want to set the. I mean, he could do whatever he wants at the end of the day, right. But you don't want to set the standard that you're essentially going to give a team a free pass at the end of your career. I mean, I don't think the NFLPA wants to set that precedent.
Yep. So I think they probably go their separate ways.
Right. And then Xavier Williams, defensive tackle. He's done okay in moments, but he's been fairly injury prone. He's had a tough time staying on the field, and probably somebody you can upgrade at that position, I'd assume.
Yeah, you could probably find a cheaper role to give you the same type of impact. So that's another one you move forward from.
Right, but there are two guys I think that you do re-sign. One of them, Mike Pinnell, who we talked about. Yep. I think he was a huge difference maker when they brought him in mid-season. I think, Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu get a lot of credit for it, but I think the job that he did solidifying that interior defensive line rotation was massive.
Yeah, I don't disagree. He's good. He's great in run support, and he's able to help in somewhat pass rush at a certain amount of reps. So I think you can use him half the reps, and he uses him on a lot of rundowns. So, I mean, he's somebody I'd be willing to bring back, at least as a rotation, and somebody who could spell Nottie if needed, but also be able to help in against certain run schemes so that Patrick can get on the field and the Chiefs can get off the field.
Yeah, no, he almost every game down the stretch and in the playoffs, Mike Pinnell made it one or two impact plays where he showed up. He showed up consistently this season, and I think you reward that. The other guy is Emmanuel Ogba, who the Chiefs traded for. The Browns had given up on him. The thing I like about Emmanuel Ogba, we talked a lot about Frank Clark, and even though early in the season he wasn't getting sacks, and even though early in the season he wasn't real healthy, the attitude that he brought to the run defense and setting that edge, I think, was important. And I think that carried through the whole season. He's a guy that he's not a one-trick pony like Dee Ford was. He's good both against the run and the pass. I think Emmanuel Ogba is built in that same mold. Like, he's got pass rush value. He's maybe not one of the better pass rushers in the league. I'm not saying that, but he's decent at it, but he's also good at setting the edge. And I think if you have Ogba, and Frank Clark on the two ends, I think you're comfortable with that moving forward if those guys are your starters, especially with the way Passanio progressed this year mixing into that rotation.
Yeah, Ogba is kind of, I know some people are speculating it's based on a contract here, but I promise you if you've watched him over the handful of years, he's finally in the correct scheme. It wasn't just about trying to get a big contract.
Right, it was about fit, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was finally in the correct scheme that utilized his talents, and he was able to do a good job, and Brendan Daly brought out the best in him and being able to set the edge, allowing him to kick into D-tackle. He's a very versatile guy that they can utilize in many different ways if he comes back healthy from the pec injury. So, I mean, I that's somebody I'd be willing to invest in, and if you can find a comfortable number that's where either below where Okafor was or around Okafor at the $7 million cap hit, I get that, and that's kind of what I'd be willing to pay to bring him back. And that's also something you got to decide. Do you want Chris Jones, or financially, do you want to be able to pay for Pinnell and Ogba to be back? Do you want to be solid across the entire defensive line and have a steady rotation, or do you want to pay for two stars that if they go down, you don't really have much of a rotation? Because the problem for the 49ers was they don't have a rotation. They got four guys, frontline guys, and that's who they roll with. And they got tired in the Super Bowl and they lost because that's one of the two reasons they lost. Yeah. So you need 8 to 9 defensive linemen that can stay fresh and are talented and versatile in this league if you want to be able to consistently succeed.
Right. I mean, I think the Chiefs showed teams how to beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl when they went tempo in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. If you can go tempo and you can wear down DeForest Buckner, and Joey Bosa, or sorry, Nick Bosa in particular, it's the advantage quickly shifts to the offense. And we saw that. And I think, we always talk about how teams are going to copy what the Patriots did in the AFC Championship game last year, or what, teams that have had success against the Chiefs do. I think that's something, if you're the Rams, you're looking at that and you're saying, how can we incorporate more tempo when we play the Niners? If you're the Seahawks, how can we incorporate more tempo to wear these guys down? So,
agreed.
Sticking with the defense, couple linebackers, Reggie Ragland and Darren Lee. I don't think either one of those guys are critical to keep around.
No, like we talked about with Ragland, I mean, he's a one gap downhill run support linebacker. That's where his wheelhouse is. I mean, he's an aggressive blitzer, and he's great in those both regards, and he would have been great in 90s defenses. He would have been the ideal linebacker you would have wanted, but it's a whole different era, and you need somebody that's more versatile, especially in coverage. So, unfortunately, I think they're probably going to have to go in a different direction. Darren Lee's a special teams, high-end athletic guy, but he never was able to put it together in any aspect of being a consistent linebacker.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the guy. They took a flyer on him in the trade with the Jets. He was supposed to be the guy that could bring that coverage aspect to the linebacker position, but it didn't really pan out. And we talk about when Mike Pinnell came, the defense got better. When they stopped using Darren Lee as much in the defense, the defense got better there too.
It helped.
The only safety that's a free agent is Jordan Lucas, in terms of unrestricted guys. I think you learned a lot about how the Chiefs feel about him when, you know, when Juan Thornhill went down and they moved Kendall Fuller, who was essentially a slot corner, back there. I mean, I don't think they viewed Jordan Lucas as a starter moving forward. He's a good special teams guy, but I don't know that you want to overpay on a contract for a guy whose primary value is on special teams, especially when you're already doing that, you know, with Daniel Sorensen, who has more value in your base and sub packages than Jordan Lucas has proven to have during his couple years here.
Yeah, Lucas is more of a vet minimum, high upside athletic guy, but he's a special teamer here, and the fact he couldn't be able to beat out Armani Watts or anybody else tells me that that's probably go separate ways on that one.
All right, the interesting position, I think, other than defensive line, is cornerback, because you've got Bashaud Breeland, you've got Kendall Fuller, you've got Morris Claiborne. I think whatever happened with Morris Claiborne at the end of the season, I think, sealed his fate, much like LeSean McCoy, who we'll talk about when we get to the offense. But Breeland and Fuller, do you like either one of those guys enough that you feel like you need to bring him back?
I'd be willing to bring Breeland back, probably cap it off at $8 million per year. That's kind of where I'd want to leave that at. I mean, it could get up to $10 million on the open market, if not more, but I would try to see if you can cap it between that 8 to 10 range so that you can pay that. I think that's kind of where he's at, but you only want to do it for 2 or 3 years because I think athletic ability, it's going to start to wane probably in another 2 to 3 years to where that's going to start to go down. You have to make a decision in that aspect. But then also, I think he's a technically sound guy, but he's not the one you want going against the team's number one or their most athletic receiver. He's going to have some trouble with that, and he's going to grab and have some holding penalties. So he did admirable in the job that he did, and he performed well, but there's I would want him to be like a number two, not your number one corner.
Right, and I think if you re-sign him and you've got Charvarius Ward, if you go into next year with those two guys, I think that really puts a premium on finding a cornerback early in the draft that you can develop, you know, at that position to, you know, and I know, you know, they did that with Marcus Peters and obviously didn't work out from a personality standpoint in Kansas City, but you know, and you're not probably going to be able to get him picking at 32, but that I think you know, when you're looking at those first second round picks, cornerback becomes a bigger need if you don't address it beyond retaining Charvarius Ward and Bashaud Breeland.
Yeah, and then the other guy you were mentioning with Kendall Fuller.
His versatility, I mean, did he increase his value late in the season, in the postseason, when he showed that he can place, you know, that he can be kind of an all-purpose defensive back?
He helped himself if he hits the open market, which I think he will. In the Chiefs scheme, I think he's more of a safety. I don't think he's a slot corner. I don't think he's an outside corner. I don't think he's a corner in general. I think he's a safety. I think he's got to be in zone. I think he's got to keep the plays in front of him and just drive on the football and react to it. I think he needs to be able to see the quarterback and be able to do it. Where he was in Washington and how he played, he never recaptured that in Kansas City, in my opinion, from what I was able to watch. And I think he kind of put himself in a position to where, like, he's a true safety.
Yeah.
And maybe zone safety.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what they do there. And I think some of that maybe, if they like him at safety, the decision to keep him may come down to the medical reports on Juan Thornhill and how soon you think he can get back and whether you think he can be a legitimately healthy contributor in 2020 or whether realistically, because of how late in the season the injury happened, you're looking at 2021 for a fully healthy Juan Thornhill to get back on the field. Because we know it takes some time, even after a guy gets medically cleared and gets back, to be fully back to his old self after a severe knee injury like the torn ACL he had. So, you know, depending on how they feel about Juan Thornhill and his progress, that may impact the decision they make with a guy like a Jordan Lucas or a Kendall Fuller.
It will certainly be very interesting, Todd.
All right. Hey, well, that takes care of the unrestricted free agents on defense. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the other side of the ball.
Kansas City, are you ready for a great morning?
When you wake up,
it's go time.
That's what we're here for, getting you caught up when you wake up. Ready with a clear, easy-to-understand out-the-door forecast to help you plan for your day. And ready with your fastest and best ride into work.
Lindsay, Taylor, Deja with traffic, and Lindsay with the latest weather.
Make sure you
are ready for the day ahead.
Wake up with 41 Action News, Monday from 4:30 to 7 a.m.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick Jacobs, we talked about the defense. Are you an offensive or defensive guy, by the way? Are you a believer in defense wins championships? You're better off having a great defense versus a great offense? Or which side of the ball do you value more, if you value one side of the ball more?
I have an offensive mind. Or offensive.
Yeah, no, you do. Yeah, no, I'd say offensive, yeah. Based on the number of times I have to answer a certain question in private phone conversations the same way. So yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Okay.
So
yeah, no, I have an offensive mindset. So, yeah, no, you, yeah, I like to look at how to attack defenses, how to motion, how to manipulate them. So that's kind of always been my wheelhouse, but it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy a good pass rush.
Well, the good news is on offense, most of the key guys are still already under contract. I mean, your tackles are set. Kelsey's set. Mahomes is set. You feel much better about Damian Williams. You know, you've got Tyreek. You got Sammy if you want to keep him, although if you want to hear our thoughts on what they should do with that situation, hit the Wayback button and check out last week's podcast. But I don't see anything where you look at it and say, oh, my goodness, there's just such a glaring need. This team is going to struggle to score points if they don't address this right away. Certainly there are some areas they can improve, but the good news is there's not anything that's just frustratingly, that they have no talent or depth at. Maybe the one position you could argue would be interior offensive line, though, right?
Yeah, they're going to need to make some additions, both either starting wise or depth wise, just depending on who they want to move around into what spots and who develops. Yeah, they need to improve their interior offensive line one way or another.
I mean, they were able to get by with kind of a patchwork group that you and I both agree wasn't particularly impressive. But one of the guys who helped solidify that was Stefan Wisniewski when they brought him in
right. Mid-season,
free agent. I mean, what's the number you'd feel comfortable bringing him back with, and how important is it, do you think, to keep him as part of this unit moving forward?
I would not want to pay him high-end money in any way, shape, or form. I would like to see him
$4 to $5 million?
Yeah, I would like to kind of see in that range, and you could throw in some incentives and bonuses overall to kind of bump it up if he wants to, but yeah, I wouldn't. You don't pay $9 million for that. You can. I would like to see him here, but yeah, I wouldn't go over $5 a year.
Yeah. I mean, and then when you look at, like the backfield, you've got LeSean McCoy, you've got Spencer Ware, who they brought in late in the season, then got hurt, and then you've got Anthony Sherman. The writing's on the wall. I mean, like they already signaled what they're going to do with LeSean McCoy, in my opinion. Yeah. I think Spencer Ware is probably going to retire. I doubt if he's going to come back and try to give it a full season. Although I would keep his number in case you have a running back go down in November or December again, and see if you can bring him back like you did. Because I was impressed with the job that he did in those couple weeks that he was able to play. But out of that group, I think Anthony Sherman is the one guy because of his special teams value. And also, he's one of those guys that I think, in terms of locker room cohesion, he's a valuable asset there, I think. He's a character on the team. You know, he's a beloved guy on the team. And I think he's a guy that's worth bringing back at the right price.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of their top-end special teams performers. He's still a really good run blocker. He can still catch if you need him to. He's a very versatile guy, and I think he can be had for a reasonable price. I don't think you're having to break the bank and pay him top-end fullback money for or whatever to be able to keep him here. I think he's really good for the locker room.
Yeah, and nobody's going to confuse him for Kyle Juszczyk, who, the 49ers have arguably the best fullback in the game. But
well, there's only a handful of them.
So, right, but he's a poor man's version of that. And for what Andy needs him to do, and then the value he brings on special teams, I think that they can reach an agreement. And I think Anthony Sherman should and will be welcome back in the Chiefs locker room.
Yeah, hope so.
DeMarcus Robinson, another guy. you know, he showed flashes the first, you know, the first quarter of the season, and you thought, oh my goodness, is DeMarcus Robinson going to become a dude this year? And then he disappeared for about 12 weeks. I got to imagine they can find a more cost effective replacement for DeMarcus Robinson.
They will always have that one quarter or two against the Raiders in week two.
Yes.
They can always remember that one together.
He had a really nice catch the next week against the Ravens on the sideline, too, I think.
They will always have those, those handful of memories.
Those two games, yeah.
I mean, he's a special teams performer that's a really good run blocker, but he's not a guy that... I don't think he can run the full route tree, and I just don't think that he ever truly had everything that they needed to fit the system. And he, don't get me wrong, he's gonna go make good money somewhere.
It'd be a Chris Conley type situation, right?
I think it's gonna be very similar to what Albert Wilson got down in the Dolphins. I would not be surprised one bit if he got that from the Giants or the Eagles, and he can go make that money, and then, you know, he can set himself up, and then those teams are gonna find out the same thing that the Chiefs did. It's just not. He's a role player. He's not going to be one of those elite guys.
I think one of the things that they will miss is, you know, you alluded to it about the run blocking. He did a good job blocking on the edge. That's not something that gets a lot of credit. You know, the guys blocking downfield, but he was one of the guys who invested in it and was adept at it. But you don't pay wide receivers big time money to be a good downfield blocker.
You shouldn't.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, look, if you have a guy who can, you know, who runs a good route tree and can get open and makes plays and also is a great run blocker, well, congratulations. You hit the wide receiver lottery. But if you have to pay for one of those two skills, it's not the run blocking that gets you the big bucks.
Correct.
So I think that they can move along probably and replace him. Blake Bell's the one guy, though. You know, local kid from Wichita. His uncle, Mike, right, was a former Chiefs player. I think he did a decent job. I mean, you know, he has some value as a pass catcher. He's not going to ever be confused for George Kittle or Travis Kelce, but he's a good run blocker on the edge. He's a smart guy, former quarterback. You know, so I think he brings a lot of value. And if you can get him on, you know, you don't need to break the bank for him either, but he's worth bringing back, in my opinion.
Yeah, if you can find a comfortable number, that's probably under three a year. Below that, I think that's something I would enjoy bringing him back on. And I think he can give you a really good, like you said, he could be a really good run blocker. He's athletic. He can catch. He would be comfortable in the system, get more time to work with Pat. All those things combined, I think he can help you. And I don't think he's ever going to be, like you said, he's not going to be that guy that's going to take over a game, but he can be one of those role players for you.
And as long as you have Kelce, you don't necessarily need him to be a guy that can take over the game.
Correct.
You need him to be able to seal the edge and surprise the defense from time to time over the middle, yep, which he's perfectly capable of. I still think that you probably, depending on where you find value at tight end moving forward in the draft, you know, I mean, if a guy who you had a first round grade on falls into your lap in the second round, I still think that's a position where you consider investing some draft capital in this year, you know, so that you can get younger and cheaper at that position moving forward.
Certainly a possibility, Don.
Thanks, Nick. I'm glad you didn't at least shoot it down offhand.
Hey, I'm trying to keep us on time right now.
Well, the last position, I don't know if it's sneaky important, but I do think that there's value to having a veteran quarterback in the room that Patrick Mahomes trusts and sees the game in a similar way to Patrick. And can, you know, maybe, obviously they can't do the things that Patrick Mahomes does physically, but you need somebody who can help him understand the game, you know, break things down and bounce ideas off, you know, and make sure if he's got questions when he's doing film study about whether he's seeing, you know, something the right way, you need somebody there that can either confirm it or help him figure out, you know, whether he's deciphering the defense the way he needs to. And so Matt Moore and Chad Henne are both free agents. I mean, you could always go find another guy probably, but I think you want to try to keep a relationship intact there over multiple years, right?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I think Matt Moore gives you that edge just because Patrick seemed to really flourish working with him, and they really seemed to have a good cohesion together when they were on the sidelines during some of those mic'd up segments. So I really like Matt Moore. I think he would kind of be the one I'd lean towards, and he helped him win a football game, and I liked what he did on the football field. Doesn't mean Chad Henne's not tough. He's a tough dude. I still remember that blitz he took in the Atlanta Falcons preseason game 2 years ago right under the chin, threw a strike to Garrett Dieter for that touchdown, 35-40-yard touchdown off a little go route there. But Chad Henne, when I watch him in training camp, just wildly inaccurate quarterback.
Yeah. Well, and look, we'll all miss Henne time in the preseason, but I think, especially in the Super Bowl and the playoffs, when you saw Patrick sit down to go over plays on his little tablet, the guy sitting next to him more often than not was Matt Moore. And so I think that tells you where it is. The other thing is, I think Matt Moore, you can probably get a little bit cheaper than Chad Henne. So I agree. I would lean Matt Moore there. And then depending on, the development of Pat Shurmur or what you do with the draft or other undrafted guys, that's how you fill out the rest of the quarterback rotation there.
Yeah, that's the road I would go down.
All right. So with that, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, there's a few more players, a few more things we got to clean up, because there's some guys who aren't quite free agent eligible and stuff like that. And so we'll kind of give a thumbs up, thumbs down, and maybe take your questions. I don't know. Here we go on 4th and 1.
Weather alerts on the free 41 Action News app. Download it today.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. We got a couple of guys we still got to get through. These guys are restricted free agents, or they're guys that haven't accrued enough time in the league to kind of hit the open market. So the Chiefs will have an opportunity to in some of those cases, if they offer him a contract, they'll have the exclusive right to sign that guy and or sign and then eventually trade, something like that. One of them is Keith Reeser. He's a restricted free agent. I thought he was having a good camp. I thought he had a role on this team based on what I'd seen in training camp before he got hurt. But that's been the big knock. The Chiefs have had him in camp a couple years. He's never been able to be healthy. Do you bring him back on a cheap deal for camp depth and to see if maybe he's can figure out a way to stay healthy at this point?
I think the problem is he's inching closer to 29. He's 28 or 29 years old, depending on when his birthday is. I know last season he was 28, I believe, and turned 29, if I remember correctly. But coming off the Achilles injury, that's at that age, that's going to be tough to be able to come back from and return to your old form. So, unfortunately, I think you don't place a tender on that, and you kind of let him hit the market.
Yeah, and look, even if you don't offer him a contract, there's always a chance that he feels most comfortable with the Chiefs and comes back on a vet minimum deal to try to go through camp and see what he can do. And that may be the best situation for all parties involved.
True story, Todd. True story.
What about the exclusive rights free agent guys? You got Mark Kemp, a couple tight ends, David Wells and Deion Yelder, and then left guard Andrew Wiley. Out of that group, Wiley's the one that jumps out as somebody you definitely want to make the tender to and keep him around for a little while, if for no other reason than for depth.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Kemp, you kind of try to do a tender to where you kind of bring him back for camp, see if he can recreate what he did last year in training camp and try to earn a spot. And then obviously Wiley, you definitely put a tender on, try to see if you can work him in overall. And then Yelder, I would just kind of let test free agency and don't place a tender there.
Yeah, well, and you got to remember, they've got the John Lovett kid that was on IR this year who they really liked, and he's still on the team and may have a role in that tight end room moving forward into next year. So I agree. I don't think you need to worry about Deion Yelder. Although Demetrius Harris available again.
He signed with the Bears.
So oh, did he already sign with the Bears? Okay, I missed that. I saw the Browns let him go.
He went to the Bears.
So apparently, maybe he wasn't John Dorsey's guy like we thought all along. Maybe he's always been Matt Nagy's guy.
Oh, no, he was Dorsey's pet project. I'll tell you that one right now.
All right.
He's a big fan of that cat. All right, you ready for another edition of Check the Tweets?
Yeah, although I'm a little disappointed in that intro.
All right, well, too bad. We gotta keep moving. This one's going to be from Clint. He asked, with the needs both at linebacker and corner, a highly successful addition to which group would be more transformational?
I really think in today's, I mean, look, the Chiefs got by with Charvarius Ward and Bashaud Breeland last year. I don't think that Spags' defense demands that you have an elite shutdown corner. Obviously, if you have one, great. But I think that shoring up linebacker, because that's the area that teams attack the most, whether it's the Packers, whether it's the Niners. And I think you're going to see that more and more moving forward next year because teams saw that that was where they were vulnerable. So I think getting a linebacker who's a true three-down linebacker is the biggest need on that defense.
Next question is going to be from Chiefs fan. He asked, "What would you want us to sign? Would you want us to sign Dez if the price was right?"
I assume he's talking about Dez Bryant, unless there's another Dez out there.
Yeah, Dez is seen on the Twitter working out with Patrick Mahomes.
Right. Yeah, and Mecole Hardman was going down there to work out with him some. I love that relationship. I think that Mecole Hardman can benefit from that. Dez Bryant, obviously in his prime, was elite. And look, we've seen it before where guys still have some tread on the tires and then take some time off, and that actually helps them, kind of come back and rejuvenate their career. He's a guy. I'm not paying more than $3 or $4 million though to kick the tires on that on Dez Bryant. But if you can get him back at a decent price, I think just adding that veteran presence in that room is helpful.
It will be interesting, Todd, to see what they do. And our final question.
But he's not worth it like $10 million a year or anything anymore.
No. That's a vet minimum with incentives deal.
Right.
All right, and our final question comes from Scott Stockwell. He asked, how many of the current unrestricted free agents will remain on the roster?
Well, we just kind of went through that. I didn't count up the number necessarily.
That's a tough breakdown.
I would say you're looking at Matt Moore, Anthony Sherman, Blake Bell, Wisniewski. So that's four on offense. And then on defense, I would say probably another four and five, depending on what they do with Chris Jones.
Yep.
I think Pinnell, Ogba, Fuller, and Breeland, like we talked about, are there. The only other guy that I think is a possibility is, depending on the Juan Thornhill situation and depending on how willing Dave Tobe is to beat the table for Jordan Lucas, he's a guy that I think there's a path for him to come back. I think it's a fairly narrow path.
All right, Todd, that's all for this edition of Check the Tweets.
And that's all for this edition of 4th and 1. We hope you guys enjoyed it.
What will we be doing next week, Todd?
Well, there's a little thing called the NFL Combine.
Heard of it.
Which is hopefully we get over-caffeinated Nick Jacobs in anticipation of the Combine next week.
It's certainly a possibility. I just got to eat my lunch a little bit earlier so I don't have the carb crash.
Right, and then I can also bring in some coffee.
Coffee does not it does kind of help me. Not as much as a soda does. That's my apologies, guys. I had a soda yesterday. I don't like to have them 2 days in a row.
Oh. Well, there you go. So next time, he'll do better in planning his soda drinking during the week.
I will try to dedicate the proper amount of respect to each and every one of you with the amount of sugary drink that I ingest.
That's right. Well, don't jeopardize your health, Nick.
Thank you. Because you're right, Todd. Your health matters.
Indeed it does. Solid plug. All right, guys. We will be back next week to start talking about Combine. And then I think after that, we should probably talk about what happened at the Combine.
So until next time, I bid you adieu.
Take care, kids.
How about those Chiefs?